Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. My name is Brooke Taylor. This is episode number 170. This is part two of the Holy Land Pilgrimage recap, calling it a Holy Land Diary, going into the pages of a literal Lenten pilgrimage. Last week, covering a kind of the wide angle, a macro, the overview of the itinerary, where we went, some of the sounds, impressions along the way. And then as we landed, made our way from Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee, up to Jerusalem, some observations, thoughts about that. So today, going in for the close-up shot, the micro, talking to individuals like Jarir, our tour guide. We're going to hear about specific stories like the Orthodox priest at Jacob's Well, and much more on today's show. But first and foremost, a really exciting announcement to share. Big news about our fundraising efforts for Aid to the Church in Need. So on the last day of the trip, after being there for 2 weeks, our culmination really was my son Grant, Brother John Michael Paul, Brother Michael Mary from the community of St. John, running the Jerusalem Marathon, the half marathon. But it was behalf of ACN, Aid to the Church in Need. Brother Bruno Thomas, I should mention, also, and two others from our group participating in the 5K. But leading up to the race, the net was cast asking you to support the Pontifical Foundation Aid to the Church in Need, focusing on helping Christians in Syria, in the Middle East. And we did it. You did it. We worked together and we raised, we got to have a drum roll for this, Mark. Okay, there we go. We raised a tally, a total of $2,500. Wow, wow, wow. That is fantastic. So a big thank you for your generous gifts, sharing it, telling others about it. God be praised. God bless you. $2,500 to Aid to the Church in Need. And we did finish the race. I have to mention that. So I actually recorded some of the sounds from the Jerusalem Marathon. Wanted to share a little bit of that with you. Really a lively event. Check it out. Talk about energy. That's it. Lots of music along the course. And with the natural adrenaline, you know, that keeps the old legs going. Lots of rich symbolism too, which was to be expected. But at one point, we ran through a portion of the old city. We passed an Armenian church and the tears just started flowing, thinking about the reality, the history, all the souls that have passed these paths. And it was the last day of being there for 2 weeks. So all of this, you're just kind of downloading and processing in your heart. We ran with the color orange, wearing the color in solidarity of the 21 Egyptian Coptic martyrs that were beheaded by ISIS in 2015. So to be there in the Middle East, running along these brothers and sisters of ours in solidarity, and knowing that it wasn't just us, those that donated, those who have prayed, supported, cheered us on along the way, and all of those together in this group, this peaceful run, it was like a tidal wave of grace. So lots to process. And in the end, running a race like I hoped and dreamed and trained for, because it is not always that way. In fact, the last few, this was my sixth half marathon, and the last few races I've done have not gone well. I haven't felt good. I haven't finished good. And so I had some anxiety about that going in and was a little bit, a lot intimidated about the course because I had heard the inclines were so challenging. And then not at 1.00 along the race were there porta potties. I have never seen that in my life. A lot of people were darting off into the bushes, so that was new for me, but it was okay. It all worked out. My son and I stayed together for the first 10 miles, which also meant a lot, my 15-year-old son, Grant. I finished at 2 hours, 20 minutes, not too bad with the hills, and then my son came in at 2 hours, 23 minutes, and Brother John Michael Paul crushing it with a time of 1 hour and 57 minutes, like a boss, and he makes it look easy. So in all, it was a tremendously blessed event. Would do it again in a heartbeat, and couldn't have done it without God opening that door and such great support. So thank you again for bringing to life the 2 Timothy 4:7. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Praise be to the Lord.
Sancta Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus.
So taking you now back into the pages of Pilgrimage, on this little Diary of the Holy Land Part 2, that sound was the prayer in our bus every morning, sometimes midday, evenings if we were traveling late enough for Vespers. It's one of the blessed perks of traveling with monks. You get to live like a monk, and it was glorious. The Divine Office in the bus, kind of our roving chapel every day. And so with having three brothers, those prayers filled the bus, and they brought their psalters. We had some psalters to pray along. And we were so busy along the trip that those times for built-in prayer were really valuable. Otherwise, it wouldn't have happened with the pace that we kept. And Point in Case is actually this special segment here with our tour guide. Jarir is a tour guide. This is the second time that I've worked with him. And he is an Arab Christian living, working in Israel. This is where he's from, his family, his wife and twin daughters. And he has a lot to say about not just what happened in the past, because that's what he does as a guide, is that he brings our faith, the geography, the history to life, but how things are today. And the funny part of that is the time went by so fast, the only chance that I had to sit down with him was on the bus after the prayers, after the Divine Office prayers on our last day, coming back from Nablus, Jacob's Well, to Jerusalem. And so you're going to hear the atmosphere of the cozy charter bus, but I have a feeling that you're not even going to notice the background once you actually hear him start talking. And one thing that I want to point out is that the story of Jacob's Well is worth noting. Such an extraordinary true story, laying down our life in a way that most of us cannot fathom. So take a listen to that part of the conversation and all of the sage wisdom and experience that our tour guide has to offer. This is my conversation with Jarir. Very blessed to be joined by Jarir, our tour guide, on the last day of our pilgrimage on a beautiful day with the sun shining and our group just concluding our trip. And I think we're not just leaving with a sense of exploring, but also evangelizing, to be able to go out and tell others about the Holy Land. I remember the first time visiting, feeling so strongly about that. And I believe everyone on our trip also feeling that same sense of urgency about sharing with the world the beauty and the importance of coming to the Holy Land and experiencing the life of Christ. And what makes it extra special is when you have a wonderful tour guide. And we are very blessed to have Jarir with us. And so he's been doing this for many, many years, very good at what he does, and lives what he teaches and shares with us as a native of this land, and with me now. So just wondering, does it ever get old? You do this over and over, Jarir. You must enjoy people see the falling in love with the Holy Land.
Definitely. I don't feel like it's a boring or it's a, like a routine or something like that, because every day you are with a different people, a different mentality, talking about different things. You would have the people who had the faith. Sometimes people have the doubts. So each one have a different way to talk to, okay? So that's the way what make my time. It's not boring, it's not a routine. So it is changing all the time.
How many years have you been doing this?
Well, professionally, I started in 2006. I got my license earlier, but in 2006, this is where I started guiding. And I follow the steps of my dad, because my dad was a tour guide from 1960 till he died 2011. I learned so much from him.
And he would be very proud. I know he gave you his ring as well, right?
That's right. That's right. Even before he died, he was worried about his library. He had so much books that he collected during his life, you know. And when he knew that I'm going to follow his steps, because I wasn't, I wasn't born as a tour guide. I was a technician. I worked in this field for a long time until I found myself going into this field in 2006.
And your father, an Arab Christian, share a little bit of that faith background?
Yes, my father is a Christian. This is where I got my faith from, because this is how we get our faith through our parents. Like I would say, we inherit, as we inherit the house and the lands, we inherit also our faith.
What are people most surprised, do you think,
to see and experience when they come to the Holy Land? Because you are the witness of all of the reactions. So what do you find most across the board people are surprised by?
Remember, Brooke, when I started with this tour, I said, I'm going to walk with you the steps, and to walk and to follow the steps of Jesus. And this is what I actually do. I don't do any kind of a normal tour for non-believer in a way. I like to go with people who are coming to the Holy Land to walk all the processions, to be, I would say, active, not only just doing the tour, but also walking the processions with the prayers and so on.
So what would you like people to know? Because you're talking about walking with them. We're seeing the place that Christ taught and suffered and died, buried and rose again, was born. And I think so often in the next breath, people say, yes, but is it safe? So what do you want people to know about coming here and the security of a pilgrimage?
I'm glad that you mentioned this, because this is one of the things that hold so many pilgrimage, that they postponed their coming for years and years. First of all, the media sometimes show what is happening, like we are in a war. That area is really very dangerous. I will not say that there is nothing happened, so I will not lie at you. There are sometimes that happens, some violence here and there, but as a tour guide, always we make sure that where we take our people, it is safe. We keep on following the news. Our colleagues, sometimes we call each other if something happened. So we postpone visiting this place, and later we come back to it. Well, life will be back to normal.
Well, I think one example of that is Jacob's Well. We went to Nablus today, which was a place I had not gone before, and you said you don't often go. So we were very blessed to be able to go, and for me it ended up being one of the highlights of our entire trip. Not only the beauty of the church itself, but the story behind it. And then we had the cherry on top, which was to actually see the Orthodox priest who came down and a bit of his story. Would you mind sharing that as well?
Yes, sure. Security is one of the most important things. Now, sometimes Jacob's Well, Joseph, there are some organizations, radical Jews, okay, who want to take the place from the Christians, okay? They will be like coming, doing some kind of violence, and then you would see the other side, the Palestinians will not accept them coming to that place. This is where it would be really not safe. For tourism, and this is we have always to keep following. Now, when there is nothing happen, we can go and visit. This is a church over here where did witness so much violence, even I would say from the 1967 till today. Israel want to have this place, to add this place, or to divide it, let's put it this way. And of course, Christians, they've been here, I would say, from the Byzantine era. During history, they've been controlling the place. And I don't think the priest will mind if anybody want to go and visit. Okay, but sometimes people want to have the place for themselves, and that's what brings some kind of a violence. The story of this church, to be more clear with it, once we know that there was a small church, then they decided they want to build a larger one. And when they start building this larger one, I think some people did not like the idea of rebuilding this place again as a church. So they want to stop the building. And imagine they start doing the building in the 1980s. And it took them till 2007 until they finished. And I remember the violence, it's the deadly violence even, because we had an earlier priest that was in that area. One day they came, they opened the church, and he was inside being killed. Not only being killed, even he was being, his body was being divided, was being cut, okay? We did not know who, because no evidence, and nobody know truly what happened and who did that, okay? So we cannot point out our finger that this organization did that or this, but we know that he's being killed because he doesn't want to leave the place.
And he was martyred?
Yes.
And the predecessor remained, I understand, and is there today?
Yes, he is, and he's working hard. He's following the steps of his colleague, and he is also facing from time to time some kind of problems. But so far he's doing fine. Even this priest, he's so much attached to the place that he decided right in front of the church to build his own tomb, imagine.
Yes, we were standing there looking at the stone sarcophagus, and you turned and said, here he is, as he descended down the stairs with a cane and a beautiful beard. And I know he's also an iconographer, but to pass that every day, I know there's a story about St. Jerome, and he would have a skull on his desk, and the phrase in Latin is memento mori, to be reminded that we are dust and to keep our death in mind. And it's interesting because I think that for himself, where every day he's going by his future burial place. But that's just one little stop along the way. And all that you just shared, we are able to see and process, not to mention the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and going to the Church of the Nativity in Galilee. And so with all of this, in the years that you've been doing this, do you have any particular special stories of how a pilgrim was affected, of a way that they shared with you, it really changed or blessed them in a profound way?
Well, I think many people were being touched. You know, sometimes we came with doubts whether this has happened really for real or not. I was a kind of a mirror to them, okay, showing the culture, mentioning a few things that sometimes we don't understand. So actually, I would say, yes, I was a kind of a help to many. I cannot remember exactly individual story because it was very short.
We can attest to that. It's just a blur.
I'm going to do the interview with you. But yes, I believe that I was some kind of waking up somebody inside you, you know, which you don't want him to wake up, because today we talk about science and we talk about faith, whether, you know, to believe in this or to believe in that. This is not something simple. As a tour guide, as a Christian, I would say tour guide, I always like to bring the facts and then go with our faith, try to put them together in order to persuade people about the steps that we are walking. Like I said, sometimes, you know, what makes things closer between me and pilgrimage is that we don't talk by the tongues, from heart to heart. So this is the message. My faith is like yours, and we are sharing together our faith when we go along these important places as a Christian.
And, you know, the Bible is full of stories. Jesus loved to speak in parables. That was his favorite way to teach. And you are such a gifted storyteller, which boggles my mind because you're doing so in English. And one of our pilgrims is from Lithuania, and she said, I just can't believe Jareer's English, it's so good. She, from her native language, understanding your English and how good it is. And I know you also lead tours in other languages. So in terms of, you talked about your dad's library and all that he left behind, your education and upbringing, did you just grow up knowing all these different languages? Has it been a challenge?
Of course, we as a Christian community, we are a small Christian community that we invest in our educations. We don't like our kids to grow up ignorant, okay, without any degree. We encourage them always to study in order to be somebody in this community, okay, where people will need you to be somebody. And that's why you see that I was being sent to a private school, which was a burden on my father because he had to pay tuition. Education here is for free. We are talking about till high school. But when you go to a private school, that means you have to pay a lot of money. But we are willing to do that. So I was, when my father sent me to school, it was to the brother schools where I learned at that time Arabic, French, English, and of course Hebrew. We learned the Hebrew because we live in this in the Israeli society. I learned Hebrew from the street. I did not learn it from school, but then I went to school again to learn the alphabets, the Hebrew alphabets, and this is how I come end up with a four language. Sometimes I feel, you know, I am way behind of others, because others, they speak at least 8-9 languages, but it is okay to me to be, I satisfy myself when I say four language.
Yeah, that's very impressive. And I hope that my kids are being inspired. And your children, I know, are the recipients of that same ethic of education. And you, your wife, your beautiful girls here. And while your family has all, you have great education, you could go anywhere in the world, and it's not easy to be here and to be a Christian, and yet you choose to stay. Why is that?
To be honest with you, I feel that I cannot live far away from this country. I have something, it's like the fish. If you take that out of the water, okay, she'll die. And I think this is something that I'm so attached to here. This is on one reason. And the other reason that was really let me stay was my family. My family, my mothers, I say, I'm talking about my father and my mother, did not want to leave. And all my brothers now, like many other families, Christian family, they immigrate. So I'm the only one who stayed behind with my mother and my father, plus my younger brother. So in the beginning, I wanted to be with them, but after they died, I couldn't find an excuse for me to go, all right? So I decided to stay. I don't know if I make the good decision, because I see my girls is growing up in this society, which sometimes it's very, very difficult to live in as a Christian, okay, minority over here.
And why is that?
Well, to be honest with you, Christians today are facing a lot of problems from Jewish side, Islamic radical, both sides. So that's very difficult.
How can we pray for you, and how can we pray for the Christians here and assist?
Well, I believe the only way that we keep on praying for these people, for their security, for their safety. So that's the only thing that we can do for them, praying.
And take a pilgrimage with you.
Well, a pilgrimage is a must. I mean, listen, there are three monotheistic religion, and if you go to their law, you would see that they insist on every person to make a pilgrimage during his life. I'm not saying everyone should come or you need to come. I would not say that. But at least you have to come to support your brothers and sisters, because there's a lot of people don't even believe, or they don't think that there are Christians in this land, who is also, when Jesus said, you are the salt of this earth, we are the salt, because we are preserving these places for you and for others.
Thank you. You're and welcome. You are a gift in so many ways. I don't know, I can only say that in one language, but thank you, and God bless you. Thank you,
Jareer. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Pope Francis' prayer for the Holy Land. We ask Jesus, the victor over death, to lighten the sufferings of our many brothers and sisters who are persecuted for his name, and of all those who suffer injustice as a result of ongoing conflicts and violence. There are so many of them. We ask for peace, above all, for beloved Syria and Iraq, that the roar of arms may cease, and that peaceful relations may be restored among the various groups which make up those beloved countries. We pray for peace for all the peoples of the Holy Land. May the culture of encounter grow between Israelis and Palestinians, and the peace process be resumed in order to end years of suffering and division. The spiritual journey of intense prayer must continue for everyone. Our concrete participation and tangible help in the defense and protection of our brothers and sisters who are being persecuted, exiled, killed, decapitated, for the sole reason that they are Christian. They are our martyrs of today, and they are so many, we could say that they are more numerous than in the early century. I hope that the international community will not remain mute and inert before such an unacceptable crime, which is a worrying deviation from the most basic human rights.
Thank you again to Jarir. A pilgrimage is a must. I second that emotion, that quote from him. One of our pilgrims, Christina, actually pointed out, she said, you know, so many people take a trip to Disney World every year, Disneyland. It's a must. You know, you've got to do it. There's something magical about it, they say. And I don't dispute that. But to walk or run or hobble in the footsteps of Jesus never gets old. I mean, you talk about a magical experience. How much richer and all-encompassing is a trip to the Holy Land? So at some point, I hope you'll be able to go. Maybe it's 20 years, maybe it'll be next year. And that's the beautiful thing, is we never know where the Lord is going to send us. And in the meantime, I hope today's program brought the Holy Land to you in a small way. That was my prayer, my hope, in enfolding you into the pages of this diary. And whether it is contemplating the treasure of our faith, the beauty of our heritage, or an ongoing call to maintain the faith that we so love, which was a big message in the first part of our episode of the Holy Land Diary, I hope that you feel that, this renewed sense of zeal in our mission as Christ followers, especially as we are on our Lenten journey as well. So St. Paul, pray for us. And a big thank you to my producer, Mark Cumming, for his dynamic skills and quick work. Mark is a producer extraordinaire, so for any production needs you might have, check him out at cumminghomestudio.com. Until next time, friends, may the Lord bless and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. God bless you.